Okay, welcome. We're here to talk about the World Citizenship category for Imagine Cup and how you can best conceive and pitch your tech for good, tech for social good kinds of projects. And joining me today is Jane Messick from Microsoft.
Hi.
And Jane, what do you do here?
I work on the citizenship team. I lead our technology for good work globally, which is all about how we help nonprofits use technology to deal with crazy social problems. Our team also manages the YouthSpark program, which helps youth around the world get the IT skills and resources they need to get jobs, further education, or start something, whether it's a small business or a social enterprise.
Awesome. That's great. Mm-hmm. So you've had
best
a lot
job.
Of experience then with groups, companies, NGOs that want to help the world make things better in some fashion with technology?
Yep. For about 18 years now, I've been doing this type of work. And a lot of it has been, how do we help nonprofits adopt technology, mm-hmm. even just for their course of business, how mm-hmm. they become more productive. But increasingly, it's about the solutions that help them and their programs in the field mm-hmm. Have greater impact on mission. So it's been changing and evolving, a lot more different and fun technologies from mobile to cloud, so it's a really fun place to be.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So can you begin by talking, you know, a lot of our students might hear about something in the news that concerns them, mm-hmm. some kind of an issue or a problem or whatever, but how can they begin to refine an initial emotional response into something they can do for real and how they can actually address that?
Great question. So, and that's actually the hardest question, is how do you think of that problem that you actually want to try to attack and do something about? Mm-hmm. We describe it as knowing the difference between what the issues are and what the problems are. Mm. Issues are very wide, long-term problems long-term areas that will never be solved. So think about world peace, about hunger, disaster. Those things are not going to be solved. But problems are those slices within the issues that you can actually approach and you can actually do something about and solve. So think about hunger as the issue, but creating more effective or efficient food distribution systems could be a problem that you try to solve. Mm. So, you know, a lot of folks come to me, well, you know, I'm really interested in solving puppies and kitties. What do I do? Well, that's the issue, you know. There's a lot of puppies and kitties that need adoption. What's that problem you're trying to solve? Mm-hmm. Maybe it's deploying volunteers to go rescue an animal from someplace and bring it to a shelter. But it's really focusing in on what's that issue area you care about, mm-hmm. but what's that solvable problem within that issue area.
Right. So how do you define a problem and scope it to where you can actually address it?
Yeah, you know, and often it's not the person that is trying to solve it, you know, is not necessarily the person that understands the problem the best. So we often work with even our employees that want to bring their technical skills to help nonprofits. We try our best to connect nonprofits, those subject matter experts that really know the issue area, know the problems, to help to define things that are actually solvable with technology. Mm. And so we do a lot of work with nonprofits around the world and subject matter experts to get to the heart of the problem. And we do that in a couple different ways. One, we run these things called generators, which we partner with a nonprofit called Caravan Studios to bring together subject matter experts within a given area, say human trafficking. Mm-hmm. And those subject area experts will come and they will spend a day sorting through all the different problems that they have within their issue area and set up a kind of a list to mm-hmm. go through. And then we work in partnership with those subject area experts to find out, okay, which of these problems are the top priority and how to best attack with technology solutions. There's also some resources out there around something called hackerhelper.org. And out on Hacker Helper are a bunch of problem areas and issues and causes that have already been researched. Mm-hmm. There's APIs, there's all kinds of information about those problems. So you can go out there and look at the problems and issues you're interested in.
That's great.
Yeah.
So I guess if you're considering there's an issue that's moved you, mm-hmm. you're trying to identify a problem within the issue that might be something you can really address with a project, with a solution, then finding a subject matter expert who mm-hmm. you can talk to, interview, consult with is a really important step.
Absolutely, absolutely.
So I imagine that on a college campus, for example, while there might not be someone on campus who's, you know, in the field right now, of mm-hmm. course, they still might have some expertise relevant to that issue and might have contacts you could rely on
Absolutely.
To make those introductions.
Absolutely. So, yeah, reaching across the campus to different professors that are in that space, thinking mm-hmm. about that space, great first step.
Mm-hmm.
Also, you know, even in your own local community, there are probably issue, you know, there's experts in your local community, even though it might be that local impact, mm-hmm. That might have knowledge of more of a global approach.
Mm-hmm.
So depending on if you want to have, you know, a big breadth problem you're trying to deal with, or maybe a really hyper-local problem, I bet you there's people that you can reach out to locally as mm-hmm. well. But I think a great first step is talking to folks on your campus.
Yeah. Okay. So once you've got an idea of, you've got the issue that's moved mm-hmm. to, you've got a problem that you've identified, or it's begun to identify, then how do you begin to sort of describe and frame a technology solution to a problem? What should you be thinking about while
yeah.
you do that?
Something really that I think is probably more unique around social good problems and social good solutions than maybe innovation solutions is that there's a whole ecosystem around a problem. It's the people that are funding that problem, the people that are designing solutions for that problem, it's the people that are delivering programs on that. You know, there's a whole ecosystem of folks out there. And so it's really making sure you understand the ecosystem around that problem. Who are those stakeholders and what are the roles they play and how you fit in there?
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not something that's easily done in a vacuum. You
right.
can't be in your dorm late at night coding for a solution for a problem if you don't really understand the ecosystem first. So mm-hmm. that's one of my first things I recommend is looking at that. And actually, there's a tool. It's called the Tech for Good Ecosystem Map.
Oh,
and
that
it's,
sounds great already.
zoom.it/WAC/FK61. And it's okay. You can pull up this map and you can zoom in and it shows all kinds of stakeholders and the roles that they play in kind of this solutions for good space.
Got it. So if, for example, you've identified a problem that you are wanting to address, you can essentially, you might even just diagram on a whiteboard
mm-hmm.
or something.
Absolutely.
Okay, well, we've identified these six nonprofits that are working in the space. There's a government ministry in that country that mm-hmm. tries to grapple with this, whatever the situation mm-hmm. is, and they're an important part of this thing. They're going to be maybe even at the level of local neighborhoods or communities mm-hmm. and how they're organizing, and they may be people in those communities mm-hmm. that are recognized leaders in that area. And so if you can map out that whole ecosystem around a problem, then you might begin to understand where your solution could fit in.
Exactly. And who of those stakeholders have roles that can support you in what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's also critical. So if you're trying to create something that really relies on a network of health clinics, you want to make sure you're engaged with the stakeholders of those health clinics.
Right.
So it's really important to kind of understand where you're trying to go with your solution, because mm-hmm. that will also influence, you know, how you think about the business you're trying to build later on and how
right.
you will distribute the solution and have the solution actually used
mm-hmm.
and scaled.
So the business aspect is interesting. In this tech for good kind of space,
mm-hmm.
I imagine there are both for-profit
yep.
companies and projects engaged, as well as, of course, the nonprofits mm-hmm. that we often think of in related to this space. How do you even begin to consider which path to pursue with a project like this?
Right, yeah. So there's most of the solutions we've seen have been done in the nonprofits, with the nonprofits doing themselves, but there are a lot of social enterprises
mm-hmm.
that drive that. And a lot of it has to do with you know, what you're trying to do with your solution. Are you actually trying to scale it to some broad way? And partnerships in the for-profit world might make a bigger difference than partnerships in the nonprofit world. So as you think about which you want to do, you have to look at, you know, everything from what's my business model? How am I going to sustain this?
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's licensing or donation or partnership, who are the most likely partners? Is it a nonprofit? Is
mm-hmm.
it a pharmaceutical company? What's the best way to get funding for your solution? Is it from foundations? Is it from governments? Is it from venture capitalists?
Mm-hmm.
And then it's not an easy decision. I'm seeing more and more tech for good solutions come out of the social enterprise space.
Mm.
And because they're able to develop different models for licensing that they can make money and reinvest it into the mm-hmm. social space to make it scale. you know, I think the space is kind of early, so it's hard to tell which is going to be the most successful.
Yeah.
One of the, just regardless of which you go, just understanding where you fit in that ecosystem is super important.
Okay. All right. So, so now we've got from issue to problem, we've got the ecosystem kind of defined. And then once you know your ecosystem, you can imagine a role where you could find a path for a solution there. How do you need to think about the technology of your solution and, you know, what kind of problems you may create by picking the wrong technologies or having requirements that are too high or too inappropriate for
Right. So appropriate technology, super important in the social good space. So it's everything from what technology is available where you want to deploy. Mm-hmm. You know, you're not going to create a smartphone app in for a rural developing country where you barely have any electricity. So you have to really think through what's the appropriate technology for that problem you're trying to solve,
right.
And who the users are. So the tricky part about social good is that you have to think about not only the user, but the beneficiary. So you have to think, okay, how am I trying to impact, you know, this person I'm trying to help, the human impact, but then the user, who's going to be using it and what kind of technology will be needed for that. So that's very tricky, especially when you're asking nonprofits to adopt a solution that don't necessarily have the funding to purchase the hardware, whether it's you know, the PC laptops or mobile devices. So you have to really think through that business model of what's the cost to the person who's going to be using it. Those nurse practitioners in rural Australia aren't necessarily going to be able to buy a smartphone for their use.
Right.
You have to think through that.
So that's interesting. So that, that adds, adds an aspect to that ecosystem map, is if you can look at that ecosystem and see the NGOs involved, see the agencies involved, et cetera, you might also try to assess for as best you can from the information available what kinds of technologies they are already using.
Right.
So if there's an a problem you're addressing, there's an NGO in the area that is already, you know, writing press releases about how they're using their field workers or using smartphones for something or other, that tells you there's an opportunity there to make a smartphone app. But if they're like, we are delivering buckets of water to people who are thirsty, like they don't have smartphones necessarily involved in that process, that could be harder. Or, you know, using Connect during an earthquake.
Like exactly.
Maybe not the best idea.
Not the best idea.
Yeah.
No, brilliant. No, that's exactly it. So you have to really think through what's the appropriate technology for that scenario. That's why the cloud is brilliant, you know, because you can create a lot of things that run up in the cloud that the end device doesn't actually matter. You know, so that's what was brilliant about Team Inemia's solution last year.
Yeah, our 2014 Imagine Cup World Champions.
They did a fantastic job. They could you could use any camera-enabled device. So it could be one of those Nokia bricks, as long as it can take a picture and send an email, or, you know, and the solution still works because all of it's up in the cloud. So it's, you know, that's why the cloud is really helping leapfrog in this space quite a bit.
That's a great example. So Inemia's project was a, well, it's really kind of a, it's a web service that can take a picture that you take of your, take a selfie of your eye, and it takes the image, rolls it up to the cloud, to Azure, where they can do image processing on it and diagnose that user for anemia. But because it's done in the cloud, as you say, it can be like a little feature phone that doesn't run apps at all, but it's got like a tiny camera, and you can email that photo to the Inemia website, and it ingests the photo, does the processing, and responds back with the diagnosis. So whether you have a rich app, whether you have just a web browser, whether even it's just, you know, you go into your community, you know, resource center, and they have a laptop there for some kinds of access, and you with a webcam, even that can work for the solution.
Right.
And that's a great example of how the cloud can be deployed across any platform and really broaden that technology base.
Yeah, we love it. We're excited to do more cloud-based solutions.
That's awesome.
Fantastic.
Okay, well, so Inemia is a great example of a very practical solution with a great, you know, kind of broad possibility. What's another example of a solution you've seen in the tech for good space where you think they really match the technology with the problem?
You know, recently, we're working with a group called Translators Without Borders. And at time, so disaster, here's the issue. Disaster strikes, earthquake strikes, Haiti, for example. And you have multi-language responders coming in and multi-language victims. Part of the challenge of responding and coordinating that disaster was the different languages that were being spoken. And so a group called Translators Without Borders is creating an app to help break that translation down in the field to help coordination very quickly. So there's a case where they've really narrowed in on a problem, but you know, in creating a very simple translations using Big Translator on this app, you know, really saves lives because they're able to coordinate and respond more effectively.
And that's a great actually example to take, because I think I've seen quite a few ImagineCut projects over the years that are, they're very much thinking about the person who is most in trouble, the person who's most suffering, and might need information or assistance or some kind of resource. But in many cases, it's going to be the NGOs or the government agencies who are best equipped to actually deliver that help.
Great point.
And they could use technology to enable their work to better reach those people.
Yeah, exactly.
So instead of necessarily thinking about, you know, just that farmer in that in that country that doesn't understand enough about the climate situation to really get their crops right, it might be you can develop a software project that's going to assist an NGO who's distributing information to farmers all across a region. And that way you can multiply using the people that have the technology and have them do the outreach to the end user.
Exactly right. That's why when we look at methodologies around, you know, really successful apps that have been created. One, knowing the problem, engaging the subject matter experts in that ecosystem early in the definition and during the creation and the design of that solution, there's a much higher likelihood of success that it will land in the field, it will scale, and actually have impact. Right. So that's, we really look, you know, hey, you know, hackathons are fun. Hackathons, you know, get a lot of great energy, but unless those hackathons are grounded in the problem and the people that know the problem well, and then that the solution lands later with the people that are actually delivering on that mission, you know, the likelihood of successes goes down.
Right. So for our students who are working on pitching their project, what are some don'ts you've seen, some mistakes you've seen in your experience as an ImagineCup judge and so forth over the years?
Yeah, which is super fun, being a judge. I love it. Thank you. You know, and I think there was another interview that really covered pitches really well. And from a social good aspect, one, don't over-exaggerate your data. You know, again, get into the problem and make sure it's real and the data's real around that problem. Don't throw in data around the issue. So, you know, you have a problem you're trying to solve and you put out you're going to reach 3 billion people, but, you know, really be honest about the problem and your solution, because at the end of the day, that's much more effective, that we understand that. Make a really good connection between the problem and the solution. So again, Team Anemia, for example, they were really focusing on the problem of anemia. It's actually pretty widespread. And you can have a pretty good impact in it with a simple app. So the idea is that their solution really very specifically addresses this well-defined problem. That was a great pitch.
Yeah.
Another thing I really like is I like it when all the team members and participate in the pitch itself.
Oh, okay.
You know, I think that's really fun. I think there was a team from Ireland last year, Access Earth.
Yeah.
I thought they did a great pitch. All three were engaged. All three participated in it. They showed that they were multidisciplinary. So you not only had the coders, but you also had somebody that had much more business expertise and understood the field. So I appreciated that in some of the pitches when they show that they know just beyond just the coding, they actually know a little bit more about the field and the problem.
Oh,
so that was
great.
That was good.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Wow. All right. Well, Jane, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
It's been really, really illuminating.
I'm very excited about what happens this next coming year.
Okay. Awesome.
Fun stuff. Thanks,
folks. Okay, that was a great interview. I really appreciate Jane from Microsoft Citizenship taking her time to help us with this. So let's recap some of the most important points that Jane shared with us. So one is that you need to understand the difference between an issue and a problem. An issue is the big thing. World peace, hunger, starvation, earthquakes, tornadoes, cats and dogs falling from the sky, whatever it is, right? The problem is the thing you can actually address within that issue. You're not going to solve world hunger, but maybe, as we saw in the case of a ImagineCup team from Australia, you can develop a project that will do a better job of connecting excess food with food banks who need to distribute it to the poor. Like, that's a problem within the issue of world hunger, right? So find that narrow, specific problem that you can address. Don't try to tackle the entire issue. Second thing is you need to know your ecosystem. When we talk about an ecosystem in the natural world, we're talking about the combination of plants and animals and weather and geography, landscape, all these things that come together to make a sustainable, ongoing community of life, right? Well, there are ecosystems in business and in areas like tech for good as well. So if the problem you're trying to address is, let's say it's subsistence farmers who in a particular area who don't have the education or the information they need to make the right decisions about how to raise their crops. Well, what's the ecosystem there? What government agencies are involved already? What organizations are actually there already on the ground, in the field, trying to help those people? Maybe they aren't trying to help farming specifically. They might be there for some other reason related to health or sanitation. But if they're there, if they're in the community doing their work, they are part of the ecosystem, and you should know they exist and know what they're doing there. So figure out those groups, figure out those organizations, the government agencies, political people, even local people at the community level. You know, we're talking about potentially the mayors of cities or city councils, those kinds of things. Research the area you're working on, research the problem you're working on, figure out that ecosystem. Because when you learn the ecosystem, you're going to begin to understand how your solution could fit into that ecosystem. And you may realize there are opportunities to actually change your solution or find a partner for your solution that's going to make it much more effective. So learn the ecosystem and speak to it confidently, because you will, in doing so, you will also demonstrate your expertise in the subject, which is crucial to convincing people listening to your pitch. Finally, consider the difference between users and beneficiaries of your project. Beneficiaries are the people that benefit, the people whose lives will be changed and improved through your solution. They may be the ones who benefit. That does not always mean they're the ones who are using the technology you create. If you're creating a project that is a medical diagnostic tool, most likely your project will be used by healthcare workers, nurses, those kinds of people who are actually doing the analysis. The beneficiaries are the patients, the citizens of those areas, but the users are somebody else. Make sure you understand if your project has a different set of users than it has beneficiaries. And then make sure you're serving both audiences. It needs to help the beneficiaries, but also be suitable for and usable by the users of the project. And as I think Jane said, you know, if you are developing something that requires a smartphone that runs apps, well, you know, your beneficiaries may not have smartphones that can run apps. So in that case, you may want to pivot towards finding a solution that works for a different kind of user in that space who can then, through their efforts, help the beneficiaries. So consider that, the access to technology, the access to services, and just you know, what requirements are going to be needed for your solution to actually reach the users and the beneficiaries. That's it for World Citizenship. Thanks for listening, and let's move on to a quiz.